The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
I'm Matthew Kosky, fellow with the Office of Career Services. I'm pleased to be here with such a distinguished group of panelists to talk about alternative careers in the law, a topic that's near and dear to my heart, having lived the story, but also as the alumni career counselor, doing it, counseling alumni and students on a day-to-day basis about the pros and cons of beginning in the law and transferring therefrom, or not even beginning in the law, beginning in a non-traditional legal career and pathways that way. So for those alumni out there interested in alternative legal careers, I'm a resource for you for sure. I'm happy to set up a counseling appointment and talk to you about your career trajectory. And for the students out there, it looks like we have a lot of them as well, know that the Office of Career Services can help you in this regard as well. Any of our counselors, not just myself. The alumni panelists to my left, they're going to be doing all the talking. I'm just going to take a few minutes up front just to make a couple of observations and relay some data that might be illustrative on the whole sort of dynamic of why people choose alternative careers, where they go, how they get there, et cetera. But before I do that, I do want to just give us a quick lineup of our panelists, and they are more intimately going to introduce who they are, their profiles, how they got where they are. Starting with Dan Binstock here to my left, who's a 2000 graduate from WCL, currently the managing director of BCG Attorney Search here in town. To his left, Jeffrey Chin, a 1990 graduate of WCL, currently the assistant director. Actually, I'm saying currently, probably because careers are always in transition, but not transition, moving forward. Assistant Director for the California Innocence Project at California Western School of Law. To Jeff's left is Neil Hare, a 1995 graduate of WCL and the founder of Global Division Communications, a public relations firm specializing in representing associations, corporations, and firms, law firms. And finally, to Neil's left, Lauren T. Foe, who is also a 2000 alumna of WCL and the CEO of Voe Enterprises Corporation, a real estate finance and acquisition concern. So we're really fortunate to be to have this panel here before us, representing a great cross section, law-related legal careers, but also non-traditional careers within the law, and I'll talk more about that distinction in a moment. But today's agenda is going to be rather loose. The format's going to be loose. A panel question and answer, informal, ask questions as they arise. But I certainly want us to go over a couple of key questions that I would guess are on your minds, particularly, why do people choose the law? What are the motivations that are out there? There are lots of reasons, some of them very positive, some of them are reactions to the realities of the practice of law, and those need to be discussed and faced as well. But let's talk about how they did it. What are their strategies? How did these four individuals, and how do others engineer their way into alternative legal careers? What are the pros and cons of leaving the law? And if you leave the law, can you ever get back? Is that a consideration? And talk about their experiences in that realm, perhaps, and others as well, to the extent we have alumni here in the audience who are experiencing this career transition. Finally, what are some law-related and non-law-related careers in the law? Where do you find them? How do you market yourself to them specifically? Just in terms of getting a snapshot of who's in the audience, how many alumni are out there? Oh, great. And the rest of you students? Okay. How many are just entertaining the idea of either not starting a career in the law or of leaving traditional legal practice? Okay. Any of you sort of in the process of engineering that out already or moving forward in that realm? Okay. So you have an idea of the profile out there. Just another minute or two in discussing again that distinction I made earlier regarding alternative legal jobs for lawyers versus alternative law-related careers. Alternative legal jobs for lawyers, what we talk about there, are really jobs where a JD is required, not merely preferred, and where the practice of law is either somewhat related or somewhat integrated into your day-to-day practice. And I think Jeff Chin up here probably resembles that profile the most. Perhaps Lauren, but we'll find out more about to what degree on a day-to-day basis Lauren is practicing law. She's doing that much at all, given that she's certainly doing more real estate finance than the practice of law. On the other side, definitely Dan and Neil represent the alternative of law-related careers. That's everything else you can do with a law degree. Where your law degree is not required, but it is seen very much as an asset, quite frankly, or a liability if you're not marketing yourself properly in your resume, in your interviews, et cetera. And this is where, again, there are highly transferable skills that they're bringing to the table, and the employer appreciates that and is hiring them to that. And just another observation I'd like to note, it's interesting to see the now National Association for Law Placement as we speak to students in terms of what's driving these trends. Since they did a study, a 15-year now study, showed that since 1985 and 2000, three times the number of law students from 5% to 15% chose non-traditional careers right out of the box. So there's certainly an increasing trend for law students to consider non-legal or law-related careers upon graduation from law school. And on the attorney side, looking at the ABA survey on lawyer satisfaction, showing 33%, these are young lawyers, strongly considered in their terminology leaving the law, with an additional 31% willing to consider leaving the law. So again, what's driving this sort of exodus from the law, if you want to call it that? And I would be careful at calling it that, because clearly not all of the motivations are running from the law. And so the good news is that some of the reasons that people are choosing non-legal careers is because, well, there's a lot of things you can do with a law degree. Here's a more than Hindy Greenberg's Lawyer's Career Change Handbook, more than 300 things you can do with a law degree versus 600 plus things you can do with a law degree. Cottage industry out there and writing to the lawyers looking for a transition from the traditional practice of law. I think very much on the employer pull side, there's a recognition from employers out there in financial services, in insurance, in media, in academics, that a law degree is a very compelling degree to have, a very compelling set of skills that someone can offer to an employer. So there's sort of an employer pull there. And I'll call it the employee push, that is the realization that whereas maybe 10 years ago, it was you had to think about an alternative legal career sort of in the closet because it was taboo to do so. Now lots of folks are joining law school knowing that it's not their ultimate goal or very open and receptive to the idea of transitioning out of traditional practice of law, and that's no longer a problem as it used to be about once we've seen. But on the other side, of course, it's not all roses, and I'll call this the employer push or the legal profession's push, which are the negative aspects attributed to the practice of law. And again, looking to that earlier ABA survey citing a decrease of civility in relations among opposing counsel driving people from the practice of law, the stress generated by the pressure to meet higher law firm billable hour requirements, an increase in the competition for traditional legal employment, and I think we all sort of felt that at one point or another in our lives, an overall increase in the demands on lawyers from both clients and employers to simultaneously charge less and do more. So there are a number of factors that are contributing. And I bring them to your attention because you really want to be cognizant of what your motivations are in exploring these alternative legal careers, because only with that sort of seed of information are you going to be able to engineer an effective search forward as opposed to a panic search of anything just because I don't want to do this. So I plant that seed and probably a good one to now turn it over to the panelists. Dan Dinstock being the first to introduce himself, please, and integrate, as I've asked the panelists, please to do, in their opening remarks, who you are, but also your career evolution, sort of your professional path, what defining moment was there, not that you have to answer them in Serato, but was there a defining moment in your career where you woke up and said, you know what, this isn't it for me? And tell us also about the details, a little bit about the details of your current profession in terms of the law practice. Do you use your legal skills on a day-to-day basis or not? And what do you do on a day-to-day basis? Is that a full enough plate?
Sure.
I'll stop there. Thanks, Dan. Take it away.
Sure. Can you all hear me okay? All right. My My name is Dan Binstock. I'm a 2000 graduate from WCL. I'll give you a quick brief background of how I got to where I am now, and then I'll address some of those questions. When I graduated from law school in 2000, I started working as an IP attorney at Finnegan Henderson, which is a large IP firm in Washington, D.C. I worked there through law school. I went part-time attendant. I guess through the last 2 years I worked at Finnegan. So when I first started working there, I was really, really excited because it was a great prestigious job, and I felt like I had, quote, you know, made it, and I was a success because it was a position that a lot of people wanted, and I felt very fortunate. As my time went on there, after about 1 year, I realized that I wasn't really having fun doing what I was doing. After 2 years, I sort of started to get stressed out because I didn't feel like all the things I liked doing, I was enjoying. For example, I spent a lot of time in my office by myself, and what I really enjoyed the most about my job was hanging out with my friends in the office and talking to people and really spending time with people and talking to clients. But I felt that practicing law and the type of law that I was doing, there wasn't that much interaction with clients. And when I did speak to clients, it was for a very brief time because they didn't want to get billed. And I, with all my correspondence was in writing. So that was when I started to feel a little bit discouraged about my daily program, what I was doing. After about 3 years, I started the novelty of being in a great firm and making a lot of money started becoming overshadowed by the other issues, such as, am I having fun? Am I enjoying myself? Do I want to be here in 20 years? So I started thinking along more of the long-term plan, and that's when I realized that this is probably not something that I want to be doing for the long term because, one, it's boring. Two, the money's not enough to keep me going. And three, there are a lot of other things I love doing. And for me, sort of the turning point, there are a couple of things that really hit home for me when I started to get in the mind frame of making a transition. One time was when I was speaking with an associate, and she was in my office for about 2 hours, and we were talking about her career and where she wanted to be, and I was helping her with her resume and cover letter, and I was really, really enjoying it. I felt like I was doing something that came naturally to me. I had a background in psychology, and I sort of thought always wanted to go into counseling of some sort, which was, looking back, sort of the nature of who I was. So I felt like I loved doing that, and then when she left my office, I had to go back to my computer screen and draft 85 interrogatories dealing with computer software, and I was just bored to tears, and I remember thinking, God, if I could only spend all my time talking to people like this, I'd be so much happier. So that was something that I sort of resisted that because for me personally, so much of my identity was wrapped up in being an attorney. I'd worked so hard. I graduated, near the top of my class. I thought I was just really destined to be a lawyer. But the more and more I thought about it and had these urges to go in the other direction, I sort of became a little ashamed of it because why would I not want to be a lawyer? This is such a great position. So many people would want it. So for me, the defining moment was when I was sitting in a meeting with our practice group and we were talking about, I don't know if you all are familiar with trademark law, but there's something that's called the Madrid Protocol, which deals with foreign filings, and it's very, very administrative. And they're talking about all these filing rules and sending copies and all this just minutia that drove me nuts. And I remember I looked over to a friend of mine and said, I will never file one of these applications in my life. And that was the point where I literally checked out and said, there's no way I'm going to do this. I can't continue faking it. So from that point on, I started the wheels of making the transition. Started working with a career counselor, talked to Matt, spoke to also another career counselor on like a monthly basis. I did a lot of personality profile tests and realized that for me, what I loved doing was talking to people, counseling people, and sort of more of a consultation type sales component. So that's the direction that I realized was best for me. So after doing a lot of research, I found out that legal recruiting would be best for me. So that's how I got to where I am now. To give you a little bit about what I do and how my JD is extremely useful and relevant for my job. I don't think I would be nearly as effective as I am as a legal recruiter if I didn't have my law degree. Because one, I'm talking to lawyers all day, and it, in terms of credibility, having my law degree is something that's very important, and I think a lot of attorneys feel comfortable speaking to me about their careers because they know I've practiced and been in a big firm, or that I went to law school and I understand the game. Secondly, I think a lot of the skills that I learned in law school and practicing law are directly relevant. I do a lot of negotiating. I'm basically helping people that want to get new jobs, I'm helping them get jobs, and I'm shepherding them through the process of applying to a law firm and basically making the deal happen. So there's a lot of writing. I write very persuasive cover letters as to why I think a firm should interview one of my candidates, and in that I use a lot of the same type of brief writing skills that I used when I was practicing law. I think aside from the credibility, the writing is extremely important. That is a skill that I learned in law school and practicing, which I'm still very fortunate to have. So the JD definitely helps me out in a number of ways. I don't think I could ever do what I'm doing. For example, most legal recruiting companies, when they're looking to hire recruiters or search consultants, they require a JD. And they prefer that you work in a law firm so that you understand how the process works. So for me, I've been doing this a year and a half. I thank my lucky stars every day that I fell into this because I'm extremely happy. I love what I'm doing. I think it really uses all the strengths that I have and focuses on them. And for that reason, I think I'm much more successful at this than I would have ever been practicing law, and I make more money this way, and so everything worked out for me beautifully, and I'm really, really thankful that I got that itchy scratch in the beginning, which caused me to start considering other opportunities, because if I didn't, I'd still be doing something that I didn't really like. So that's my quick story in a nutshell.
Did you thought that itch was just poison? We have a mic to your left. Let's do it. Get your own. I'm using microphones because you're being recorded. So.
This is being recorded?
Yes,
did you get our permission first?
$1 consideration.
My name is Jeff Chan. I work at the California Innocence Project, California Western School of Law in San Diego, and happy to be here. I guess I'm, from having talked in the sort of pre-presentation area out there, I think what I represent is people who can go back into more of a practice of law than before, because unlike everyone else, I didn't actually start out my post-law school career practicing law. And what I'll tell you my history by combining it with sort of my moment of why I didn't want to go to a law firm, and kind of why I didn't want to practice right away. During my second summer, I got a great job for a small law firm. We were doing some tax law, some civil litigation, and administrative law, and I was getting great experience. Our clients were foreign countries. We represented Morocco, El Salvador, Jordan. You know, it's great. Loved it. Worked for them into my third year, and we were at a deposition, and I saw two attorneys almost get into a fist fight. And the further the case got along, it became obvious that the lack of civility was beyond repair. And at that point, I thought to myself, you know, I like doing this. I can do it. I can be successful at it. But is this really what I want to do for my career? And I made that decision that, no, that's not what I want to do. So a combination of circumstances where they offered me a job post-graduation. It would have been focusing on tax, which I didn't really like, but it was a job, and I told them no, I didn't want to do it. So with that scary proposition, I went into my alternative career history, and I got a job being program director for Street Law Incorporated. practical law to high school-age students all around the country. And my program was to teach practical law to juvenile delinquents who were involved in the D.C. court system. So while my law degree helped, I didn't need a bar license, I didn't need a law degree to necessarily run this program, but I did have one. So I was kind of this hybrid educator, law school graduate lawyer. And again, my law degree helped me a lot. I started out being more, again, knowing how to run a nonprofit program, learning how to run a budget, learning how to work with the court system, learning how to negotiate with court officials, with funders, and all sorts of good things, which would set me up later probably to run, you know, give me a lot more skills than if I just went to a law firm. After that experience, which also illustrated what happens when you go into one side of alternative careers, which was my program ran out of money, basically, and I was looking to move on. I became a career counselor here at law school, focusing on public interest careers. So, again, you know, was I practicing law? No. Was my law degree helpful? Yes. Was my prior experience helpful? Yes. Was my law-related career helpful? Definitely yes. And then, unlike everyone else here, for better or for worse, I made the leap back into more of the practice of law. And what I do now at the California Innocence Project in San Diego, besides being in the sunshine and no humid days weather, is I screen all the cases that come into us from inmates, and I make the determination as to whether or not we should further investigate the cases based on factual innocence. And it's not self-defense, you know, no, any of those defenses you may remember have learned in criminal law don't apply here. I mean, we get things like, I'm innocent because she was drunk when I hit her with my car. You know, we take cases where people are factually innocent, and it's very, very difficult, number one, to figure out what exactly happened. Is the prosecution's version correct, or is the inmate's version of events correct? And if I get past that threshold, I then have to decide, go and somehow I've learned all this post-conviction work in appellate procedures, can we do anything? You know, you start talking about federal writs of habeas corpus, start talking about state writs of habeas corpus, you know, petition for review, stays, everything. So I have to figure all of that out, and then if I think it's still a go, then we'll assign it to a student for investigation. So I'm more back into the practice of law, doing a little more research, writing up more case summaries, more briefs, and I just want to let everyone know, I guess my point is, you can go back into practicing. Even if you start before into fray, if you never really went into it. I think the ultimate moment when I knew I could do this and I could get back into it, because I was scared when I went back into it, reading through all these cases, trying to figure out post-conviction procedures. That one defining moment when I knew I could do it is when I found out I passed the California bar. 2 years ago, when I went back there, I had to take the California bar. And because I had been inactive prior to that, I had to take the whole thing. The essays, the performance test, and the multi-state. Now, let me tell you, if you've been out of law school for over 10 years, the last thing you want to do is spend your weekends learning about future interests. Reversion. After about 20 minutes, I came up with the perfect strategy for preparing for the bar review if you're taking the bar in 6 months. Just stop. Don't even learn it. You know, I thought property, I took a chance. I said, what are the chances they're even going to test you on future interests? I'm just not gonna learn it. So passed the bar, and at that point I knew I'd get back into it. So hopefully you won't have to get to that stage to know whether or not pass the bar or not. But, you know, I'm very happy doing it. Again, you know, I really like dealing with the cases. My bosses, they're the ones that actually will do the courtroom litigation. So you know, every day is a new adventure, and, you know, I'm happy I made the transition.
Thank you. That's funny. That's how I studied for the blog the first time. My name is Neil Hare, a class of 1995. It's a pleasure to be here. I can't really think of what happened over the last 10 years. I find it such a blur. Anyway, I did recently start a public relations firm called Global Vision Communications. We focus on providing communication strategy and implementation for associations, which there's about 8,000 in this town. And corporations who do B2B marketing, mostly in the small business space. And also some law firms who are now getting into marketing themselves. It's a really big area of the law. If you think of an alternative career, helping law firms market client clients is a pretty exciting field right now. I just left a 5-year stint at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is the world's largest business federation, representing over 3 million companies, and it's one of the largest lobbying groups in town, the largest in terms of dollars spent. $150 million last year was spent on lobbying. I was the vice president of corporate communications, which basically is the head of propaganda for the business community, and it was certainly a fascinating experience, letting our constituents know what was happening, rallying them to weigh in on legislation, on elections, and, you know, covering the big issues that are important to the business community, and learning about that area, which is fascinating. So, you know, how did I get to this point in my career? And Matthew, you know, he wanted to know what the most defining moment, or what was the defining moment when we decided to leave the law. For me, it was the end of my second year. I saw this little photocopy on the wall at the old WCL building that said "Study Law in Paris next year." So I went to find out more about it. This was a program, I don't know if it still exists, but it was a semester study at Nanterre University in Paris. So I studied there as an undergrad. I thought, well, should I, you know, come back third year, spend first semester interviewing the law firms, or should I just, you know, throw caution to the wind and go back to the place that I loved? So, of course, I threw caution to the wind and I went back, and while I had a fascinating time learning about European law and French law, I also spent probably more time, you know, sitting in the cafes of Paris and reading Hemingway and Fitzgerald and Henry Miller, and having fantasies of being a writer, which I think many, many lawyers have. So I got back, and sure enough, I'd missed the interview season, and I was like a B student, which back then didn't get you many interviews anyway at AU. So I decided that my move after college, or after the law school, was to move to New York to fill the dream of being a writer. So I studied for New York Bar, you know, briefly, took it, and then I got a job working behind a bar as a bartender at a little place called Julian's, 53rd and 9th. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's a pretty middle-of-the-road Italian place. And worked on, you know, the great American novel, which I brought with me today, which was published in 1998, called An Animal Cries. There's copies up there that you're welcome to if you like. It's a dark, gritty tale of life in Washington after college. I think you'll enjoy it. So there I was in New York. I was living on a couch. I was attending bar, and I was writing a novel. And I thought I was out. And just like, you know, the Pacino character in Godfather 3, when they say, you know, just when I thought I'd gotten out, they sucked me back in. Well, that's when I got a phone call from my father, who was a lawyer in town. He had a small law firm here in D.C., and he made the cardinal sin of having one client that paid him a big retainer that he thought would never go away. Well, on April 15, 1996, the client went away, and he had no clients, no revenue, and April 15th was also tax day, and so he owed some taxes, as most lawyers do. So he asked me if I'd come and help him out. And, of course, as a dutiful son, I did. I started commuting back and forth from New York and helping him, and then I moved back ultimately and went into the practice of law, which I did for the next few years, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the practice of law. The business of law, I thought, was a tough business with the hourly rates and the clients and things like that. But finally, I had enough of that and went back to writing, but in a legal, more of a legal aspect, which is writing for BNA. I was a reporter for BNA covering securities regulation, which is a lot more interesting than it sounds. I did that for a year, and that was, I was sort of covering technology issues, And this was during the dot-com era, and I thought, of course, now I have to go to a dot-com. I mean, I have to go make my millions like everybody else. And a company called USLaw.com started in Silver Spring, and they hired me on to run the website and be the legal editor. And we had a chat with a lawyer feature where you could, you know, ask questions of the lawyer. It's funny that you brought up questions. I mean, we'd get questions from people like, you know, my neighbor's dog bit me. Should I sue the neighbor or the dog? I was going to compile a book of these things. It was actually sad in a way how most Americans don't know anything about their legal rights, which was an eye-opener. So we raised $12 million. We spent it in 10 months. And then I was out of a job and had a lot of worthless stock. At that point, I really needed to pull myself together and get a job at a stable place, which is when I went to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And that was a tricky interview. Imagine that's your line of a career since you graduated from law school. But the truth of the matter is, the law degree really was the foundation of all those things. I couldn't have done any of those things without it, even writing the novel. I mean, I was on the Administrative Law Review, and I wrote some 100-page paper, I can't even remember. And I thought, if I could do that, then I could write a novel, you know? I mean, novels are fun to write, and I just proved I could write it at length. So I wove the story together, and I went to the chamber, and there my law degree helped as well. I mean, I think the reasoning, the contracts, the negotiation, the analytical thinking, the bare-knuckle brawling that you need to do, not always literally, but, you know, I think that'll stand you in good stead. And my point is, just don't be afraid to branch out and try new things. With a law degree, you will always, always be successful, in my opinion.
I've been accused of having a tough voice, so I'll try my best to speak loudly. My name is Lauren Vo, and I graduated in the year 2000. And I'm kind of going to go backwards, because my defining moment was actually during law school. So I knew before I graduated that I didn't want to practice law for the rest of my life, and that I wanted to incorporate my business aspirations into the next. So I don't know if anyone here is in any one of the law clinics. By show of hands, is anybody here in the clinic? Anybody here in the Community Economic Development Law Clinic? Yay! that was actually my defining moment. I did that my third year of law school, and my partner and I, we were the first students to actually have a client who was in development, housing development. Usually that clinic traditionally counseled clients who are in landlord tenant issues, or issues that normally would relate to the development side of housing. At that time, we were representing a client who is part of the Port Huron area of Washington, D.C., and the developers were planning this huge development, and here you have this, you know, small nonprofit of public housing residents, and they needed representation. So anyway, to make a long story short of that, and just being in the mix of meeting developers, meeting city council members, meeting mayor, meeting all sorts of people who have a stake in building a community or redeveloping a community was very exciting for me. And it was from that experience alone that landed me a job at a small law firm in D.C. Known as Hessel & Allies. They do work nationwide, but it was my specific experience there that allowed me to land a job there as an attorney. I started as a law clerk there in January of the year I graduated, continued on as attorney for 2 years, and the second defining moment when I really wanted to get out of the behind-the-desk scene was when you start falling asleep at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because you're reading contract after contract or crunching numbers or doing things that are almost secretarial in nature. And you know, you teach your clients how to do it, but yet they still trust you to do whatever needs to be done. So one day I was talking to one of my colleagues, actually who was a client at the time, about my situation, and she said, hey, Lauren, why don't you join me, start a consulting firm to counsel nonprofit organizations who work in housing development and affordable housing. And I was like, okay. So the second day, I called my law firm, gave them a month's notice, and left. Actually, I left with a client who I had at the law firm. And that client was a developer client based in Florida, and they had 100 nonprofit subsidiaries. So I was the corporate counsel to that client. So I was fortunate enough to have that experience at the law firm and to be able to pull a client with me when I left the firm. So I wasn't strapped for cash or anything. But I started a practice immediately to that. So I did that for 2 years with my business partner. But still, it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. I was still doing the same thing I was doing at the law firm, just on my own. I was taking more risks. When you're the partner at the law firm, you start reviewing contracts a lot more carefully. You don't have anybody else to really to back you up and make sure that the decision you're making is the right one. But also, it was the same monotonous thing that I was trying to avoid. But the one thing I really, really did enjoy was the business side of the housing and urban development. So what I did was that I gave my clients back to my law firm and started a new company, which I have now, Zoe Enterprise Corporation. And what we do is we finance real estate development. And my focus is in the Mid-Atlantic region. We work with developers, we work with lenders, we work with project owners, we work with the city people of the communities that we work in developing real estate, whether it's commercial or residential. I can't describe to you the number of different deals that I have, because they vary. But as far as the application of law school to what I do, I use it every day. And although you don't need a law degree to do what I do, it's a huge bonus, because not only do people you work with trust you just because you have that degree, but also I review contracts and use contract law and use property law, gated property, very much. I use civil procedure, I use discrimination law, health law, I mean, everything, because when it's the things I always have to keep mindful of is that I am the owner of the business. So there's all these different areas that I need to make sure that I'm on top of, or I have my law, my counsel. I do have a law firm who serves as corporate counsel to me. So I'm actually the client now instead of the lawyer, which is awesome. So law school was fantastic for providing me with the set of skills I needed to be where I am today. And if I were to do it all over again and go through the 3 years of KGLL, I would be good.
Thank you. Great stories, great odysseys, and journeys and kings. Lots of questions, but let's hear from the audience. Questions, comments, concerns. If you have a particular question that you want to address to the panelists, feel free to do that too. Otherwise, generally.
Maybe all of you can answer this, but I guess I would direct it to Daniel and Lauren specifically. Would either of you, so you mentioned that the JD degree was very helpful to you, but would either of you have traded your time working for the firms? Can you see if you found the JD to a position like what you're doing now, or was that actually a critical element in your development?
Did they actually need that firm experience?
Yeah, did you need that firm experience? Was it an asset, ultimately?
For me, yes. For me, working in a law firm was getting the benefit of a $100,000 education by really, really smart people. And the skills that I learned there were invaluable. My writing improved dramatically. My thinking improved dramatically. And working in the law firm, for me, I feel like it really sharpens a lot of skills. And I probably don't think I'd be nearly as effective of a recruiter as I am now had I not worked in a law firm. So if I could do it again, I'm glad that I spent time in a law firm before I jumped out.
Thank you.
networking from law school, you know, because you feel like you're schmoozing with people to get what you want. But when I was at the law firm, actually 90% of my clients I never met, because you know, you're just corresponding by phone or email. But I forget who was talking here, but I chatted with my clients. They weren't afraid of being billed. But one of the things I really learned from the law firm is developing relationships with people. Because you never know when you're going to cross paths again in the future. And because of my contacts and networking as well as with the law firm, I probably am where I am today.
I'll chime in too. I think I do counsel people to go work in a firm first. Couple reasons. One, you know, that's a whole different skill set, practicing law. I didn't do any clinical programs here, and I think I came out of here, I didn't really know how to practice law. I had a lot of knowledge, but I didn't know how to actually do it every single day and what that business was like. I think you need to learn that, because if you do get out of it, it'll be a lot easier to go back later if you have that under your belt. If you don't, it makes going back to the law a little trickier. And the second thing is, you know, it's also one of the most lucrative things you can do. I mean, if you have law school debt or anything like that, you know, if you can get a job at a law firm and pay it off in a couple of years, I think that's something to consider. I mean, I had law school loans, and, you know, writing novels and bartending didn't really cut it, you know, needed to be a journalist. So that's a factor. And putting a couple of years in a big firm, making some money, paying off your loans is probably a smart thing to do.
Yeah, I would say that too, even the, you know, the brief time, you know, I spent as a student working at a law firm, I was fortunate that I worked with two attorneys exclusively, and I think what they're getting at is the most important thing you can take from any job, especially a law firm job, to prepare you for something else, is the training and mentorship you get at that firm. So, you know, all those skills, how to work around the firm, how to deal with all the lawyers, how to run the business, those all come through from the mentorship or training you go through. So if you are thinking about it, the other thing I would do is if you're at a firm and they're putting you through the training, expand your questioning, expand your interests, rather than just learning how to work on a certain type of case. Maybe you go to the person running the finances and say, hey, can I just talk to you about how you run, you know, whole financial workings of this place? Or the, you know, the IT person. You know, hey, how do you set up a computer network? You know, so later on, if you do go off and have to run your own business, set up your own business, you kind of have that background too. So take advantage of not just the law or legal training, but every other facet of running that firm or place you're at.
Great. Thanks. Other questions? There's some compelling questions out there, no? And if not, I'll start throwing some compelling questions. Maybe because I'm sort of linear thinking and methodology-based. Can you talk to us a bit about strategies? What, you're sitting in the audience and wondering, you know, how do I do this? How do I move forward from this merely sitting here contemplating an alternative career in the law to actually executing it? Maybe if you sort of just go down the line and just what do you think are some top strategies that people should do? And maybe we have to divide it up, I don't know, between current law students, things that they should be doing versus practicing lawyers. Does that make it too complicated?
Let's see.
Stan, so share with us, please, some strategies. What should they be thinking about doing?
I think the one critical mistake that people make is not taking the time to really look inward to see what do they like doing. I know personally I felt that when I came into this, I was just sort of following the wave. Everyone was going to a big firm, so I was just going to go to a big firm. I didn't really have an opportunity to think about whether I would enjoy that or whether it was something that was good for me. It was just sort of the thing to do. This is an exercise that someone told me about, and I think it was one of the most valuable pieces of advice I ever learned, is writing a list of like 10 things that you really just like doing, and without filtering out whether you should or shouldn't, just writing down what you like doing, talking to people, writing, you know, real estate, whatever it is that you enjoy doing. Make a list of everything. And then after each thing that you enjoy doing, come down with, you know, narrow it down to maybe three things that you feel are the most interesting to you. And a lot of times you can get this by like going into Barnes & Noble or Borders. What section do you naturally go towards? Is it politics? Is it art? beyond, you know, the linear type of thinking that you're supposed to do this, 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 because it makes a lot more money. If you think about the crocodile hunter on the Animal Planet channel, he didn't say, gosh, how can I become, you know, a millionaire and be all over TV? I think I'm going to wrestle crocodiles. He did what he loved and what came naturally, and as a result, he manifested a lot of success. So I think that's a real key important step, is really finding out what it is that you like doing and being honest with yourself, even if it's not something that's, quote, prestigious. And then after that, in terms of steps you can take, I think the most important thing you can do as a law student or as a practicing attorney is speak to people. Talk to people that are doing things that you are attracted to. Really get out there and network, meet people, take them out for coffee, and don't be afraid to really go out there and talk to people and meet people, because that is how most jobs and people, you know, make transitions. It's just through networking and who you know, and it's very rare that you're able to make a transition just based on a resume itself. So I would think, you know, I'm sure you guys will have a lot of other points, but for me, I think the most critical thing is just getting out there and meeting people and talking to people and connecting.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing too, is just keeping your contacts fresh, keeping up with people, and knowing what it is that makes you happy. And I would include not knowing what makes you happy not only at work but outside of work, because I think it's, in my experience, for me it was. I took into account all the circumstances. You know, lower pay versus where do I want to live? I'm originally from California, so at a certain point I want to get back to California. And when I got this job at the Innocence Project, it came through with both the networking and the quality of life. One, my best friend from law school, he called me and he had a position for me and offered it to me. So I'm thinking, great, San Diego, sunny, you know, beaches. On the other hand, I said, when do I have to let you know? He said, 48 hours. And you're talking about uprooting more than 10 years here. So I kept thinking, beaches, sunny, can you email me a job description? And he said, I don't have one. So I had to consider what I wanted to do personally, what was important in my life, quality of life, and took a big leap of faith, so to speak, and took the job, and it's turned out really well. So, you know, and I think in the other jobs I considered, which were law-related, quality of life did factor in a lot, and it was just me personally. Again, not only work I was doing, but the work style. My first job at Street Law could be one of the factors, maybe not, but it was the fact that I could wear t-shirts and shorts every day to work. And that was a factor that I took into consideration when I took the job, which was very, very low paying. But, you know, again, I enjoyed what I was doing. So I think sometimes people focus a little bit too much on, you know, the salaries and the money and kind of, but if, you know, it's a job that you want to do, it's a job that you believe in, and it's a job that makes you personally satisfied, you know, you can make the other things work. Everything is work, can be worked out.
I mean, I think money is the key. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I think that you have to do an analysis for your life of what, you know, how much you want to make. I mean, I think a lot of people go into law because they think they can make a lot of money in the big firm environment. Well, that's very true. I mean, I can't think of anything else other than, you know, you're starting your own business where you're going to make that kind of money. But I can tell you, 10 years out from me, most of my friends have left big firms, and the ones who are still there are kind of miserable, and that's it. They said they pay me $1 less than I'm leaving. But it's for you to make that analysis. Once you make that analysis, then it opens up a whole world of opportunity. You know, for you, you can do anything. Whatever your number is, then that opens up the world of possibility for you to have a very interesting and fulfilling career. I mean, I did many things. You know, B&A, they paid like, you know, $45,000 a year. It was a fascinating, interesting, fun job being a journalist in Washington, D.C. It was great. You know, so those are the kind of things that you have to make that decision for your life, how you want to live and what kind of lifestyle you want to have. And in terms of, you know, strategy, the other thing for me was just finding out what was out there. I mean, I was the Vice President of Corporate Communications at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, that was a job I didn't even know existed when I was in law school. I didn't. And if you told me about it, I wouldn't have known what it did. Because it just wasn't in, I'd never heard of something like that. So trade association, kind of knew what that was. Corporate communications, not really. And then I kind of lucked into it, and it was something that was really interesting and involved policy, involved publications, editorial work, and websites, and political campaigns. I, for one, did not know that. So do a lot of investigating. If you're a student, try and get some internships and find out those are what possibilities are there for you, so you get an experience. And if you're a practicing attorney now, just try and do some research and talk to alumni and other people to find out what did people do out there, in this world of ours, and maybe you'll find something that's interesting to you.
I think everything's been said, but I guess I'll add that my strategy was I went backwards. I thought about what my ultimate goal was, which is to not work, and then backwards. So, yeah. I mean, ultimately, don't want to work and just would rather delegate everything. I had a client who...
Oh, God, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know if it's easier.
I'll give you an example. I had a client while I was at the law firm who had all these affiliate companies, and he was the signature that I needed for these documents I needed to have clients to close. And he was out fishing. He does fishing competitions all over the world. And he's the CEO and president of all these affiliate companies. So I'm calling his VP. I'm like, where is he? I need his signature. And he just delegates. To his employees while he goes away and does whatever he does. I love that. That was my goal, is to do that and have the quality of life that I wanted for myself and my future family. So I went backwards, but had to be in a state of mind where I believe that I will achieve that goal. You're going to come, especially if any of you are interested in owning your own business, starting a business, and doing what you really want to do, whether it's law related or not, you're going to come across people who think, that's too risky, or are you going to go bankrupt, or that's not going to work, or is it going to provide some sort of adverse reaction to your goal? My biggest thing is, don't listen to them. Do your due diligence. Do your research. Definitely network. Meet with people who are in the same field that you want to do. And just use your instincts and your gut to move forward. That's what I had to do. I mean, I couldn't tell my mom and dad that I was leaving the law firm for gosh, months. And when I finally told them, they flipped. They were like, I can't believe you left a stable job to do this. But, it was the best decision I could have made. And I don't think I would have done it without having that core belief in myself that, that I can do it. And that there is a better... the grass can be greener if you want it to be. But you don't have to be stuck at a law firm behind a desk doing stuff that you want to do. And just find out what your passion is and do your homework to pursue that. And know that in the end, it will happen.
Lauren, I have a question. How did you develop that sort of focus and comfort with moving forward and setting that goal? Was it something that came naturally to you, or was it something you had to sort of force yourself to do it first?
I have no idea where it came from. I've always had the business-minded aspiration. I knew that in law school. I knew that if I was going to practice law, I was going to be done in 5 years and move forward to something else. But it was just that, I don't know, I think you really do have it in you, or make yourself have it. Being focused definitely is hard to do when you're owning your own business. And, you're sitting in a time schedule. But I do deals over the phone, with my pajamas. Most of my work is over the phone and over email. I don't even need an office to do what I do. And that was the quality of life I wanted for myself, especially. I wanted the flexibility to delegate and go travel if I wanted to.
The issue of risk is interesting. I think legal training and the legal mind is risk averse. And you, as a lawyer, you are always counseling your client on a conservative path. It's a very big difference between the lawyer and the business person. The business person wants to take all the risk and skirt the issues and get on the gray line, whereas lawyers are very cautious because they know all the bad things that can happen. If this contract goes bad, we're going to be litigation, or it's going to be awful. Except I'll get big fees, but it's going to be awful for you. And I think that mindset, maybe in the legal education, you know, that they can focus on kind of maybe two-tracking in the legal education to kind of get that mindset off. I mean, business school, you know, they're taught about risk. It's just something you factor in your entrepreneurial effort is the risk, and sometimes you fail, and then you do, and you just bounce back up and do it again. So it's just a mindset, too, I think.
Excellent point. And just a couple of them I want to really comment on. Lauren was saying, I sort of surmised that it's whose goal or decision is it anyway? You know, how could I possibly tell my parents I'm going to be leaving the law? How could I possibly tell my spouse or, you know, even ourselves? We define ourselves by these titles that we have. And certainly D.C. does, for God's sakes. I mean, they got the first thing they ask you in D.C. is, like, what do you do for a living? So that's the most important thing about you, what you do. So you're either going to buy into that, let that drive it, or really get back to who you are. Whose goal is this? This is my goal. This is my life. It's not my need to make my parents or my spouse or my colleagues happy or think that I'm a better person based on my someone telling me message. And then, you know,
listen to your parents.
Listen to my parents. It's like father speaking from beyond. I like this one. Identify someone, and Lauren didn't say this, but this is how I took the words. Identify someone you are envious of. She wants to be that person fishing. She wants to delegate. She wants to be the queen, or I don't want to respond. I don't want to work. Good for you. That's just, you know what? It's good to be honest with yourself. Not just someone you respect, though I respect this person. Someone you want to see, you green with envy. I want to be like that person. And that's a great place to start from a motivation thing. What is it about that you're envious? He's obviously doing work, he's productive, but he's able to do it on his own terms. This might kind of might end earlier sooner than later. A lot of other great stuff was said here too. Introspection in inventorying your goals or interests, your motivations. You get messy with it, mind map or brainstorm your interests. But you have to intersect this with reality, with what are the financial opportunities. And let's face it, you don't have to, well, you feel like you have to, make all that money up front. A lot of this stuff is incremental. It's steps to change. And that means sometimes financial reality, as Neil said, planning for the shift. You know, you need to sort of, okay, you know what, the next shift is necessary. It's not going to pay me what I need. But if that's going to take me to give me a better trajectory than this path in the law firm, I can plan for that and I can make some adjustments. Exploring what else is out there. What else is out there?
I didn't know you worked this crazy job title at the Chamber of Commerce. In the handouts, I have one of these, sort of, I call it a random walk through the Washington Post. Just on a Sunday, I looked at all these different job descriptions. For God's sake, I think a lawyer, very exciting, very interesting positions, none of which were under, actually some were under law. Attorney, legal, but associations, Superfund staff associate, commercial loan documentation specialist, real estate, marketing coordinator, American Institute for Research, field accountant, benefits manager, education, a grants management specialist. I didn't pull these out willy-nilly. I looked at the job descriptions, all of which had in them skills that would be highly valued from a JD degree or from a legal career. And to show you the variety, they're listed across the span. So in terms of looking at other job descriptions, just, you know, stirring it up, it can be messy, getting a little messy with it and embracing that. Sorry, but other questions, comments, concerns?
Sacrifice for your law degree, you know, 3 years, you study for the bar, you pass the bar, hopefully, and then even if you practice, you think, I've really, it's a long road, and to tack on college, before that, each law trade. A trade is practicing law. I mean, it really is. It's a skill set that allows you to go into court and represent clients. And that's a very valuable commodity. And when you walk away from that, there is a part of you that thinks, you know, is that the right decision? Because I spent all that time, and now I'm not going to do it. And even though, you know, a career like mine, you use it, I'm not representing clients in that capacity. And I'm not litigating or doing commercial transactions in that way. And, you know, maybe I can go back to it later, but it gets harder and harder. And you do question it. I mean, you do question why you did. So I think that sort of psychological and emotional hurdle there was tough. I really think that was the main thing. And then also the uncertainty. Again, you do 3 years of law school, you prepare yourself to be a practicing attorney, and it's kind of a stable thing, really. I mean, law and law firms, they're pretty stable jobs. You're going to do pretty well. You're going to, you know, probably have a lot of longevity. You can change firms relatively easily. You get into the rest of the world, the business world, entrepreneurial, other kind of jobs, the uncertainty goes way up. And you work for a corporation versus a law firm, possibilities of being laid off or the company going under, like happened to me at U.S. Law, is always there with every company. And that just raises sort of a level of uncertainty to your life that you also have to consider. And that was probably the second hurdle, I would say.
For me, I think my biggest hurdle was giving up my identity as a practicing attorney. I'll be brutally honest here for a moment. I think, although I'd always done well in school and performed well, there was a part of me that always felt like, you know what, I'm just fooling everyone. I'm really pretty dumb, and I've just managed to fake my way through this whole system and do really well, and inside I'm really not that bright or smart. But for some reason, when I became an attorney at a big firm, that was like, for me, okay, this is sort of my crowning achievement. I'm smart now. And for me, getting out of this, I had to deal with that issue of not being an attorney, not being a practicing attorney at a big firm, and all that sort of false self-esteem that I got through my title and position at a big firm. And so I had to sort of come to grips with, I'm not my job, I'm not who I am, but I'm, you know. So that for me was a hurdle that took about 6, 7, 8 months to finally come up, you know, to work through. And a lot of other attorneys I talked to in my job also had the same type of fear themselves. They're just so wrapped up with their identity as a lawyer.
I think for me it was kind of the opposite. These two, or everybody, again, because I did the sort of reverse and never gained that identity. You know, I always had the doubt of, is that something I needed to do? Do I need to gain that identity just to have it? You know, just to have it. And having gone back into doing practicing law more, you know, basically once you finish law school and once you, you know, work a couple jobs or do an internship, understand how the law works, understand how lawyers think, understand how law firms work, you can go back into it. The learning curve is definitely a lot harder the longer you're out of law school. But on the other hand, the learning curve is a lot easier because you only have to really worry about the substance of the topic, and you don't have to worry as much about your writing. You don't have to worry as much about your ability to digest cases and to understand cases. That comes easier. You know, the hard part is again getting ramped up to learn that particular area of the law. So,
great. Other questions, please.
I have a question following up. I'm not sure if you can answer it or not, but if you take a job in advocacy or a nonprofit work, and then you decide you want to go back to a law firm, or either go or go back to a law firm, what is the attitude of the people at the law firm? I mean, it seems
I think it's very difficult, at least with the large firms in Washington, D.C. I'm not quite sure how it is for smaller firms, but there's really a bias against that in most cases, because from the law firm's perspective, you are not necessarily buying into the whole law firm business model, and that you have other things that you're interested in. And law firms are businesses. They want people that want to build their time, bring clients, and help make money. And the fact that you've gone into public interest, there's nothing wrong with it. People say it's great, it serves a great purpose, but law firms have so many people to choose from. They want someone that's already knows how to build their time, someone that knows how to be cost-effective with certain matters. So it's the skill set that they require. Usually they're most comfortable getting that from someone that's been at another firm as opposed to someone that's coming from public
interest. And also the loyalty that that person wouldn't leave after.
Right. The thought is that, you know, that you really don't want to be in a law firm, or what you really want to be doing, because you don't go into public interest unless you have a strong passion for it. So it's something that you're passionate about, and for that reason, law firms will really question whether a law firm is something that's really truly interesting.
Well, a big firm, I mean, they won't hire anybody who doesn't work at another big firm or who has the grades for the top law. I mean, that's taken completely off the table, and I've barely ever seen it. And small firms, again, maybe more of a shot, but without. That's why I say I counsel people, go work in a law firm first. Then you can do whatever you want. It is tough without the skill set to come back later.
It's true. And then there are also, if and when you do that, there are very real marketing strategies. And I'm sure we could all speak to it. And Dan probably has tremendous experience in working with his clients, too. But each of the panelists have done it successfully. You know, getting your elevator speech down. What's your pitch? I need to know in 30 seconds or less. How you got where you are, and why you're looking to go where you're looking to go, and your background has to make sense. So it's whatever the story is, it's making sense out of it for that targeted employer. Translating that into your documentation, that is writing effective resumes and cover letters that, again, make sense of this background from here to there to here. No, quite frankly, it's quite linear and it all makes perfect sense. And then being able in the interview to articulate that. And from a career services perspective, I've worked with an alumni predominantly in that vein all the time. But
one more point, a lot of these associations, nonprofits are now, they have their own internal law firm. The chamber, for example, has its own law firm internally that does actual legal work. So you might be able to get both, you know, go do advocacy for a cause and also practice law to get the skill set. So that's something to look into.
Okay, thank you. Great. Other questions? All right, great.
I just want to say, Justin Brooks, my boss, was walked in. He brought me back into the practice of law. And one of the things also is illustrative getting jobs here, there, and everywhere is when he hired me, that made, the fourth job we've worked together? The fourth job we've worked together, including the ultimate alternative job during law school. We managed a video store together on a part-time basis. So from there, we decided our working styles could mesh together. And that's another thing I think to raise is how do you get along with everyone at whatever job you're going to take? You know, a lot of times that will ease your decisions. Again, circumstances. Financially, maybe not the greatest, you know, but geographically, things work well. If you love everyone there, if you get along with everyone there, I'll tell you, from all the jobs I've had, I would say that's probably close to the top of what my personal satisfaction would be, whether it's a typical law job or alternative career. That goes a long way. Would go a long way toward my decision where to work. If you get along with everyone there and you like the people there.
Reiterating what both Neil and Dan said in terms of, you know, revisiting old contacts in addition to making new ones. So let's look into your past, which is what time to revisit and refresh old contacts, because they might hold some opportunities for you as well. Other questions? Otherwise, we'll perhaps wrap it up. I just wanted to ask the panelists, any top resources for people to refer to who are contemplating alternative careers in the law? Is it top of their reading list or ideas that you've used?
I've got a few that I think are
Sorry.
Yeah, it's a small deal to do books. I think there are also a lot of people that do career counseling that will, you know, Myers-Briggs type of testing, strong interest inventory, and a number of these other personality tests to find out, you know, are you the type of person that likes removing staples from documents or stapling documents. You know, it goes to an insane amount of detail, but really finding out your personality type and the types of people that are happiest in certain jobs that share your personality type. And, you know, someone with your particular personality type may be happiest in this job, but unhappiest in this type of job. So I think if you can, if you have the resources to take some of the personality testing and career assessment and type of work, I think that's very helpful. It's nothing other than to confirm what you already know about yourself. And that's what it did for me.
I guess in addition, I would say, you know, read. I know for law students it's difficult because a lot of times when I interview people, I often ask law students, what was the last book you read for pleasure? And I get this blank stare for about 10 seconds. Read something.
Very quickly.
You can't read a novel. You know, read one of these career books. If you can't do that, read the newspaper. Read it online. Read the Washington Post every day. Read the Free Express they give out now. Because the more you read, the more ideas that can pop up. So I'd say do that.
Well, I would say that being in D.C. is pursuing what is known as the Washington career. And the Washington career is you're going to spend your career here. You're going to go in and out of government. You're going to go, you could work at a firm. You could work at an association. You're just going to spend here. You may get political. And it's a great career. It's a really interesting, fascinating career. And if you commit to that, it's not so important, really, what, you know, your first job is, second job is. You're just going to build on it. You're going to build on one thing after another, piece by piece, and move up the Washington career path, as many, many people do. The best place to start that career is the Hill, and getting it, you know, being a legal counsel to one of the committees. That's another thing you want to get done first, because that's kind of the thing you need to have on your resume is you pursue the career. Have you worked on the Hill? Yes, I have. You check that box. But it's a great career. It can be lucrative. It can be interesting. And it's pretty easy to find out about. I mean, there's the Association Yellow Book, which has every association in town listed and contacts. Certainly Capitol Hill, you know, there's Thomas's online, and every member of Congress's office and the contact number. And of course the government, Department of Justice, the administration, every agency, every single agency has lawyers on staff. So I would think about that as a career. It can be both, you know, legal skills, and it can also be, you know, not so legal, like what I did. And it's a really fun career. And if anybody's looking for an internship at a startup public relations firm, you know, come see me after. It'd be very interesting and low paying.
Great. You mean there's pay? Interns work for
free? Yeah, I'll pay something. Lunches.
Great. Thanks, Neil. All right.
I guess what I would add is that I discovered a lot of my passion through just doing it and experimenting with it. I don't think it's until you're in it that you actually know whether it's right for you or not. So I had many jobs for both undergrad and law school, and it was through all those different jobs that I discovered what my greatest strengths were, what my weaknesses were, and the type of people I like to work with, the type of people I didn't, type of environment that you like to work in, and that's how I guess the goal where I just don't want to work. but really, I just kind of going through all of those stages and doing all the reading that has been mentioned here, and I think just gotta do it.
Well, I'd like to. Applause for the panel. Our team members and all the guys, a special thank you, and I think she has a party here.
Hi, I'm Trishana Babb, the Dean for Development and Alumni Relations, so I get the pleasure of coming in and presenting you with gifts. We do appreciate your time. We appreciate you coming back and imparting some wisdom and giving us some night reading for the weekend.
Yeah, I think it's for free, so stick one up for